Carlo's microphone. I don't really have a good way of segueing from the weather to the Christmas bird count. It is Christmas week, or Christmas weekend. This is the last morning show that you'll hear before Christmas. And so, what, three more shopping days, I guess? And Rich Del Carlo is here as the compiler of the Christmas bird count, which, as I think we said right before we went on the air, let's imagine that we have some listeners who've never even heard of it before. Rich, what is the Christmas bird count? Well, and good morning, by the way.
Well, first of all, good morning, John.
All right, thank you.
As a segue into talking about the bird count, a little bird has mentioned to me not too long ago that today is your birthday.
Well, yes, it is.
So I just want to wish you a very happy birthday.
Why, thank you very much, Rich. That's very kind.
You're welcome.
That's the segue we were looking for.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so the Christmas bird count is, well, what? Yeah, blank slate. What is the Christmas bird count?
So basically, it has been going on in the United States for this will be the 124th year.
Wow.
And okay, it is the longest going citizen science project in the world. And it was initially, before 124 years ago, it was the Christmas bird count was a activity that took place on Christmas Day, and people just went out and shot as many birds as they could, and the winner was the one that had the biggest duffel bag full of birds or whatever.
So shot, literally shot.
Yeah. Literally shot. Somebody, yeah. Not with somebody finally said, hey, maybe this isn't such a great idea. So it was started for that and with bird conservation in mind. And basically it is an event that takes place every year, and it's primarily in the Western Hemisphere, Canada and South America. It is not in the Eastern Hemisphere, but there's lots of participants in our, in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And, it takes place between December 15th and January 5th every year, and the each count can set their own date within those parameters. The date that I have set this year is December 30th, and it is an event that is open to anybody of any bird watching level. Back up a little bit, the Sandpoint, it's officially called the Sandpoint Christmas Bird Count.
Okay.
And we have the circle has been established. It was established, I believe, maybe by Earl Chapin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember Earl.
I don't.
He was a really, really sweet old guy that was a resident of Sandpoint, grew up here, and very active birder. And he established the circle that we have today. And basically, the center of the circle is Sandpoint, downtown Sandpoint, and it is a 7 mile radius out of Sandpoint, so a 15 mile diameter circle.
Okay.
So we go from...
I'm trying to think of, where does that get us?
Yeah, it gets us across the Long Bridge, Sagal, down the Pendere River a bit, Bottle Bay, Sunnyside, and basically even all the way up to Schweitzer.
Okay, yeah. And north of town up towards, past Pendere. Okay. So this is your radius, and what you're trying to do is
we are split up into four groups. I have the circle divided into four quadrants. And we basically go out in groups. It's a lot of driving. And then we get out of the car, look, listen, and basically count every bird that we see and hear.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a time limit in terms of how long you can be in one spot, but there is a time limit. It's a 24-hour period for the count.
The day, yeah.
So if we if we were in an area that had, you know, a lot of owls, for example, we could even start at midnight and a group could go out listening for owls.
Yeah.
And interestingly, this morning I just heard my first great horned owl. So
you did?
Yes.
Wow.
So yeah, they're actually in this mild winter weather. They're kind of starting to even initiate nesting.
Wow. That's cool. Where was this, if I may ask?
It was up by Pine Street Woods.
Yeah? Oh, I didn't know. Okay. Well, there you have it. Up near Pine Street Woods, there is at least one great horned owl, apparently.
Yeah.
We would have to,
it would just be by chance that we get a great horned owl on the Christmas bird count.
Yeah. Okay. So you got a radius, you got four groups of people going out to, and they'll go to different spots within that quadrant, I'm guessing.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, obviously not every spot is accessible. You know, we do run the risk of walking down the road and peering with binoculars into people's yards and people wondering, what are you doing? What are you looking at?
Do you guys have uniforms, vests or anything like that? Like,
no.
High-vis? No? Okay.
No.
This 15-mile radius, as you said, it's been established for years. So you're comparing, the purpose of it is to compare to previous years how many, whether the bird count is in general trending up, trending down.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And in the years that I've done it, I've noticed that we, you know, the lake, Ponderay is a huge draw for migrating waterfowl. And in the past, and many years ago, we used to have tens of thousands of redhead ducks. They're a diving duck. And we used to have huge rafts that wintered on the lake. And now we don't see that many on the count. And so that's just...
Yeah,
something that I've noticed over the years, and I haven't actually heard scientifically that redheads are in decline or not. But for here,
yeah,
just from our observations, they are in. There's less.
Yeah, they've changed where they if or they're yes, they're not here. They may be someplace else.
They may be someplace else.
So how many years have you been doing this?
I've been doing it for. I've been doing it at least for 25 years.
Okay.
And I've been the compiler. Earl handed it over to me probably, I don't know, 15 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. So you've been doing it for 25 years. It was going on before that. So it's been happening in town.
I think Earl maybe started it in the 80s, maybe.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
What if somebody has not been doing it for 25 years? What if somebody just moved to town and has never even looked for a bird, doesn't know what kind of species are around? Can they participate in this as well?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Typically, I like to have a group leader that is a good birder. Bird watchers are called birders.
Yeah.
And so I like to have somebody who's a accomplished birder,
because
it's, you know, I mean, there's some obvious things that are pretty easy to identify, but lots of times it's just little nuances in identification and habitat that get hard. So, but anybody is welcome to join. I do ask that people contact me, so I have definite idea of who will be attending, so I can assign people to groups.
Well, it's
people can reach me at just give me a call, text me 208 290-1405.
Okay. By phone. We'll give that phone number out again before we're off the air if you decide you're interested in participating in the Christmas bird count. We're talking to Rich Del Carlo. He's the compiler of the, at least the Sandpoint area, Christmas bird count. What other area in our region here, who else participates? Is there like, is there one in Coeur d'Alene? And,
there is one in Coeur d'Alene. Uh-huh. And Bonner's Ferry as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Bonner's Ferry count is on the December 28th, I believe. Coeur d'Alene has already had theirs.
Okay.
So. And, you know, Coeur d'Alene has, with the development down there and especially the, you know, the demise of the Rathdrum Prairie, has become just kind of not a great place for birds.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. So that, so they've got a, but they've continued to do it and
they do. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you do with this, the information that you gather?
That's a good question. So it is actually, sponsored, run by the, National Audubon Society.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a compiler, I accumulate the data from the day. People, we meet afterwards, typically at Connie's, have a beer or whatever, and something to eat, and we go through the list, which is actually really fun, you know, because it's exciting to hear what people see or the numbers, and, you know, we start out, you know, somebody saw 300 can of the geese, and we just kind of go down the list, and then I compile that list, make note of the hours that we spent, the number of people, how many miles were driven, how many miles were walked, and I submit that to the all that data to the Audubon Society, and then that goes into a giant pool of data.
Okay.
And they used to send out a to everybody that participated. They used to send out a printed booklet of all the Christmas bird counts, which was actually really interesting and fun to see. But they don't do that anymore.
Okay.
There is no cost to the participants other than you know, just pretty much need your own vehicle, bring your own food, warm clothing, and binoculars if you have them.
Okay. So you take this data, you send it off to the Audubon Society. They send, well, they don't send you a booklet back, but do you, I mean, at some point somebody's comparing this, I think, to years gone by, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you, can you look at that data when
you can't, you can access it. And and people can access it online. Yeah. So, and like I said, they have, you know, 120 years of comparative data.
So, I mean, it'd be interesting to go back and look at, we're having such a mild winter and El Nino year, as they say, compare it, not just to last year, but compare it to previous years like this, where we had that really kind of wet and warm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And the weather does play into the, not only the birds that could potentially be here, but the way the birds are active and moving. I remember one year we had just this, we started out in the morning with this dense fog, and the air was just completely still and heavy, and literally no birds were moving around. It was, it was a very disappointing and boring day, and, but you know, that is what it is.
Yeah. So you don't get to, you don't get to scratch it on account of weather or something like
Well, I mean, it would be hard to do because everybody has committed to that day.
Right.
And it's been publicized and broadcast. And so,
yeah, it would be tough. If it's a downpour, you might consider it or something like that.
Well, we've had, you know, we've had that.
And
it could be snowing, or it could be just a bitter wind out of the north and 12 below zero.
You know?
Or 40 and sun.
Yeah.
You never know.
Which, yeah, it should be at least comfortable temperature-wise to be outside, unless you get a weird cold blast move in. But it looks like that's right now not in the forecast.
No.
What is the general trend that you've seen so far? Are birds in our area on the decline? I imagine that you're seeing a decline with the change of the habitat around here. But
well,
maybe, I don't know.
We have birds that are here year round.
Yeah.
Chickadees and flickers, mm-hmm. Downy and hairy woodpeckers, mm-hmm. nuthatches, and a few other birds. And those birds are here, and they do some movement and just search for food. And then mm-hmm. we have birds that migrate through and spend the winter here, like Bohemian waxwings, mm-hmm. and potentially common red poles.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe varied thrushes, potentially owls. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say, because those birds that migrate from the north and either stay here for a few weeks or overwinter here are what are called eruptive species, and they kind of follow more food source than they do. You can't set your clock by them being here.
Yeah.
So we may not see waxwings this year and or red poles, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are in serious decline.
Yeah.
Because those numbers are probably concentrated somewhere else.
And, mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know, within 500 miles of here or mm-hmm. still further north.
Yeah. Are there any birds that you see in great numbers some years and then aren't here? Well, like, for example, I guess some of the species you just mentioned.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Bohemian waxwings.
Yeah.
They are berry eaters. And so if we have a large mountain ash crop,
mm-hmm.
There's a chance of them being around. This year, the robins came through in huge numbers and pretty much cleaned out all the mountain ash trees. So I'm not sure if we'll see Bohemian waxwings here this year.
Yeah.
There's always a chance of, and that's kind of the fun thing of birding, is finding something that is rare here.
Yeah.
Or, didn't necessarily leave in the fall migration, like a warbler or potentially a sparrow or something like that.
Huh. Do you ever see anything really rare, like that you would not expect in this habitat? An escaped parakeet or something like that? You ever? Or does that happen? Or maybe not to that extreme, but do you ever see anything that you're like that kind of shocks you that you saw one?
Well, one year, a good friend of mine who's a really good birder, he was leading a group south of just. He was birding down by the Long Bridge and mm-hmm. picked out a tufted duck, mm-hmm. which is a species from Europe and Asia, and they are rarely seen.
Uh-huh.
You see them more on the coast, but very rare, and then super rare here. So that was a really good find.
A tufted duck.
It looks a lot like a ringneck duck.
Okay.
Except it has a tuft.
Yeah, he wasn't just having a bad hair day.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And that's something you have to account for, because there can be bad hair days with the winds blowing or the way things look in certain weather. If they're really cold or hunkered down, they look like a different, potentially different species.
And you're looking for any birds, so this would include like all the wild turkeys and stuff.
It includes turkeys, and there's hundreds of turkeys.
Yes, indeed. Hey, we're talking to Rich Del Carlo. He's the compiler of the Christmas bird count, which is coming up on December 30th this year in our broadcast area. If you're hearing me on the FM airwaves, that means you are probably within the within the radius, there's a good chance that you are in the area that birders will be out looking on December 30th. And if you want to be one of them, you can call Rich on his cell phone or give him a text message, which is
208-290-1405.
Okay. We're going to play a little music. The one that you suggested, I think I'll end with. This one instead, we're going to play the number one hit from this date in 1973 on the American charts. This is, 50 years ago today, this was at number one on Billboard's Top 100. Would you like to make a guess, Rich?
I was just thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
Ah, man. I don't know.
It's not a one that I was that familiar with. I've heard of it. So
it's not the Rolling Stones
No.
Like Jim would know.
Jim might know. I know. Yeah, would. Give us a call, Jim, if you're listening. Charlie Rich with The Most Beautiful Girl.
Oh wow.
Charlie Rich, little crossover hit here. From 1973. This is number one on this date, 50 years ago.
Hey, did you happen to see the most beautiful girl in the world? And if you did, was she crying?
That's Charlie Rich, The Most Beautiful Girl. That was number one, not just on the country charts, but in the United States. This was originally recorded as Hey Mister in 1968. After The Most Beautiful Girl, number one hits came quickly for Rich. Five songs topping the country charts in 1974, and he crossed over to the pop charts. There you go, Charlie Rich. The topic today here on the KRFY Morning Show is the Christmas bird count. We're here with Rich Del Carlo. He is the compiler of the Christmas bird count for our area, the Sandpoint Christmas bird count, which includes a 7-mile radius from downtown Sandpoint. And actually, my next question is, how many people usually participate in this?
Anywhere from 8 to 26.
Okay. And do you... do you have to pay money to like the Audubon Society to access this information from years past, or is this what you guys come up with? Is that going to be available to the public?
Yeah, I try and make that available to the people that were on the count.
Okay.
And then people should be able to access it just through going online to Audubon Society. I don't know the exact path to there, but it should be pretty easy to find once you start looking into it.
Okay. The birds in our area, what's the... Can you speak broadly on kind of the trends among the birds that people usually see around here? What birds are up? What birds are down? Who's hot? Who's cold right now in the bird world?
Well, I think that chickadees. We have three species of chickadees here: black-capped, chestnut-backed, and mountain chickadee. And I think that those birds, you know, are pretty much doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of them, and they are pretty adaptable, and they can survive red-breasted nuthatches, similar to chickadees. And these are birds that come to feeders.
Mm-hmm.
They particularly like sunflower seeds. They will mm-hmm. eat suet.
Mm-hmm.
We also have northern flicker.
Mm-hmm.
They were formerly called red-shafted flickers because they have when they fly, they have a flash of red on their wings.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Hairy woodpecker, downy woodpecker.
Mm-hmm.
They're very similar in appearance, but size, the hairy woodpecker is twice the size of the downy.
A hairy woodpecker. Okay. I think I might have one of those. or at least it seems huge to me.
Black and white.
He's about my size.
Oh, well, that would be the pileated woodpecker.
Oh, okay. There's one. He lives right in the peak of our house, and I came upon him while I was stringing up our Christmas lights. Wow. And we tussled a little bit.
And
not
so
really. I didn't actually touch him, but I looked up and I said, "What is that?" And it was the tail of a bird part. Yeah.
So was that, it was black with the red, with red on the head?
Yeah.
That's a pileated woodpecker.
Okay.
And they're pretty common as well.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Those birds struggle a little bit more uh-huh. because they require a fairly large tree to nest in.
Yeah.
Woodpeckers nest in cavities.
Mm-hmm.
And so and I don't think pileateds use nest boxes. The other woodpeckers will use a nest box.
Mm-hmm.
So the pileateds are reliant on natural cavity in an mm-hmm. aspen tree or a cottonwood. Mm-hmm. So it's important that those snags, they're called, are kept up
when
people are doing stuff.
Good to know. Yeah, I think he makes his main home in a dead old tree elsewhere on our property, but he has at least some sort of, he's created himself, he or she has created himself a little spot in at the peak of our house on the outside of the eaves.
And then, you know, the pileated makes its own hole, but then if that nest is abandoned, a pygmy owl or a saw-whet owl could use that nest hole. The owls, those little owls nest in cavities, but they don't make their own nest.
Huh. Well, this is interesting. I'm gonna ask you more about that, perhaps off the air, what I should do about this bird that is sharing our house with us. It's not in the living area, you know. It's the outside of the house, but I don't know.
Some of these birds are not here now, but like warblers and vireos, tanagers, those are birds that are here in the summer, and then they migrate to the tropics. And the hummingbirds as well.
Mm-hmm.
Those birds aren't here. They'll be back in the spring. I'm going to head to Costa Rica soon to visit my friends down there in the bird world.
Nice. As far as the population, like numbers go, you said there are most of the birds. The chickadees and stuff are doing okay.
They are doing okay. Yeah. Generally, the birds that are not doing okay are grassland birds, shore birds, probably some raptors.
Mm-hmm.
Raptors are hawks.
And,
And that's mostly due to habitat loss.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, there's always, even within the chickadee population, they suffer a lot from, you know, window collisions.
Yeah.
Getting eaten by cats.
Uh-huh. What, do you have bird feeders at your home?
Yes, I do.
Okay. What do you recommend people use?
Black oil sunflower seeds.
That's what I got.
And suet.
Yeah. Okay.
Some people put out some smaller seeds, but when we don't have the finches like pine siskins and goldfinches and they'll eat sunflower seeds, but they do like the black thistle and maybe millet, but those birds aren't really here, and so probably the least bang for your buck is putting out like a mix that pretty much attracts the squirrels and not necessarily a favorite of the birds.
Interesting. We have a couple of, I think they're doves that live on our property. Yeah, that's something we see around here.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, we have two species,
I guess.
We have two species of doves. The native one is the mourning dove, and that's kind of a thin one with a pointed tail, and that's the one that, you know, kind of sounds like an owl. The other one is an introduced bird, the Eurasian collared dove, which has basically naturalized everywhere in the United States now. It's only been in the country for 30, 40 years, introduced in Florida, and it just exploded across the across the country. In fact, we used to not have Eurasian collared dove on the Christmas bird count. And now we get, you know, we do. Especially when we go over to the bird feeders in Ponderay or Kootenay, and the trees are just covered with these collared doves.
That's funny. So that is one bird that you see now. Are there any other birds that you used to not see very many of that you're that are on the upswing?
Not that I really can think of.
No. Anything you used to see a lot of that you never see anymore, or you used to see some of and you never see it anymore?
We did, you know, and I'm not sure. I mentioned about the eruption of the red poles, and it's been a number of years that we've seen high numbers of red poles. So that one, there's always going to be some birds that we miss. You know, we didn't get you know, Stellar's Jay or something like that. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're not here.
Yeah, those are here, I think.
They are.
What is your work for this look like? How long have you been? I mean, do you start thinking about this earlier in the year, or is this just something that you wait until the 29th and you say, I guess we better do something?
Well, it's somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah. I usually start announcing it in November. Talk to friends earlier and see what their plans are, and try and set a date around people that I know that are good birders that can join me.
Then people come in. I mean, the day it happens, the day it transpires, and then you'll take the numbers. And is there a lot of work for you to do to submit these to the Audubon
Society? It is a fair bit of work, I have to say that the Audubon app site that I use is not that user friendly. So that makes it a little tougher. Because it's all done with computer. There is a fair bit of work.
So if somebody's listening and they're still thinking about it, they're not sure if they want to do this, what does the day look like, do you suspect? What do you think the December 30th is going to look like for a participant in this?
We're gonna meet at Connie's restaurant at 7 in the morning on the 30th. Coffee or breakfast or whatever, and probably head out at 7:30, and then we'll be out all day until 3:30 or so. Days are short. And it'll be, like I said, driving, walking, depending on accessibility in terms of snow depth or weather. But people just need to plan accordingly, because we will be in and out of the car, and bring snacks, food, coffee, whatever. Christmas cookies for the compiler.
Do you have do you know already, do you have like a map, you say that we want to go to these places, this is where I'm sending everybody to go? Or
I do have a map, and it's pretty much, you know, I mean, people have a lot of latitude within that. There are sites that are better than others. Basically, whatever you can get done within that quadrant.
Yeah. And the driving condition seems like it should be probably okay. If we don't get a big dump or something between now and then. So
it's not looking like it's going to happen.
No, it does not. What do you think? So if the weather's like this and the conditions are like this, do you feel like this is going to be a good This is a good year for birds?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Okay. Typically, you know, if we have a little bit of weather the night before and then it's kind of clear and sunny in the morning, then then the birds are pretty active. But, but this time of year, they're just trying to survive. So, and it's a little different because they're not everywhere like they are during the summer months where they're just anywhere in the woods. They're pretty much concentrated at feeders or moving through in little groups. Mm-hmm. One thing I did not mention is that people do have the, if they're within the count circle, they have the opportunity to submit a feeder count. So if they had a feeder, they could just count all the birds at their feeder during the day and get that to me.
Okay. It seems like something I could even do. We have a feeder with a I can count the birds.
You could probably count. Yeah. Could you identify them?
No. Some of them.
that would be helpful.
Okay. That's a good idea. I know somebody who can. That's a good note. I think I know a few people who may or may not participate, but who at least can identify.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And have them get a hold of me also.
Okay. We can do that. Let's see. Well, what else have we failed to mention here, Rich? Any details we want to mention about the Christmas bird count or anything else going on? Holiday plans for the Audubon Society? Anything like that?
There's not a real active Audubon group in Sandpoint. Coeur d'Alene has an active group, and they have meetings and whatever. So if people are interested in Audubon, I mean, they can contact me about that. I give them information. It would be nice to have, an active Audubon group here. With eBird, I'm not sure if you're familiar with eBird. That is actually run by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
Huh.
And that is a venue to submit observations. In fact, I use that all over the world when we go traveling to document bird sightings at places that I've been.
Oh, cool.
I think with eBird, there's a network that people use and maybe don't rely on Audubon meetings as much.
Was there an Audubon Society here that kind of fizzled out?
There was.
And
Bonner's Ferry had an active group as well.
Let's see. Any birds you're particularly hoping to see at the Christmas bird count?
It would be great to find red poles.
Yeah.
Common red poles. And they're a tiny little bird that nests in the boreal forest of Canada. And they look like a little finch. They're kind of with a kind of grayish white belly and a little red cap. Bohemian waxwings is always fun. We'll probably see merlins, which is a little falcon that actually nests right in Sandpoint in some the big trees.
Huh.
In fact, in the summer, it's the most common hawk you'll see in Sandpoint.
Oh, that's a merlin.
Yep. All right. Chasing pigeons and robins and sparrows and starlings.
There is no summer bird count, is there? Or is there?
There is not. Not like that.
Yeah.
There is a great backyard bird count that people can do, and that's in February. And I believe that's actually through Cornell. I do a breeding bird survey in Bonner County that I've been doing for 30 years. And that is through the U.S. Geological Society.
Huh. Well, okay.
There's a lot that happens about that people aren't aware of in terms of data, accumulating data around bird populations and trends.
Yeah. How do you, I mean, gosh, we've been talking about this for a while now, but Rich, how did you get, how'd you get into this? How'd you decide? Because it sounds like you're not, this isn't the one birding activity you do, you're involved in a number of different, the Audubon Society, the U.S. Geological Survey and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I started my interest with birds kind of spurned on by my parents' interest. They had bird feeders in their yard, and we're excited about that. And then I, it was just kind of a, it was an activity that I just always, I always enjoyed, and met people that were just fun to hang out with, and we did birding trips, and ended up actually going to school for ornithology and doing some field studies around the West. I worked at the Kootenai Wildlife Refuge for a few summers as the biological aid there, and focusing on birds. So it's been a part of my life. Definitely. And then wherever I travel, I'm birding.
Yeah. we're just about, we got to talk about upcoming events, cause it is a busy weekend here in town. We have, I don't know what else.
I have one thing to share.
Yeah.
Birding there's another world out there that just is available to people. And just to share a brief story about our last trip to Portugal, we were on the coast of Portugal, and we were standing there overlooking this cliff, and and a peregrine falcon just came flying right by us and landed on a ledge 100 feet away for 20 minutes. And so we were just had this amazing look at this beautiful peregrine falcon.
Yeah.
And that was such a wonderful experience that 90% of the people that were overlooking the cliff and watching the ocean had no idea what was happening.
Yeah.
And it even jumped off the cliff and chased a giant seagull for a few minutes. And so there's a world out there that is just so amazing and incredible that that's what I love about
it. You just have to look up every once in a while.
You just have to look up once in a while.
How many pairs of binoculars do you own, Rich?
I own one.
Just one?
Yeah.
Really? Is it?
I've gone through several.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you'd have a travel pair and a, the long distance pair and the one that's always in your pocket or something. No. You're down to one. Okay. I think that's it. Again, it's the Christmas bird count. The date is the 30th. The man to talk to if you want to participate is Rich Del Carlo. He's the compiler for the Sandpoint Christmas bird count. Saturday is December 30th. Next Saturday, week from this Saturday. And it is the 124th year of Christmas bird counts here in the United States. The phone number, again, Rich, is
208-290-1405.
Okay. And we're going to play a little music. Here we go. This one is appropriate by suggestion from our guest. And I'll be back with current events and stuff like that in just a minute.